Good afternoon, everyone. It's Monday, and I've got a church member in the office with me, and we are hanging out. We're having Jersey Mike subs, so if you hear some crunching or whatever, it's us eating lunch. We are multitasking right now, and we're going to have a conversation between us, and we're going to let you eavesdrop in on this. So, Daniel, tell the audience what prompted our podcast.
Yeah, so I listened to the News in Focus 2 weeks ago, and then you had made a comment that you don't feel like people know or how to live life well. So I text you and said, I'd like to know what your definition of living life well is. And maybe if there's some things that I could learn from what you meant by that.
Yeah, so I've been using this expression, and I don't know really how well it communicates what we want it to communicate, but it's kind of this idea of doing life well, this idea of doing life well. And, it encompasses not just the spiritual component of life. It encompasses this concept, Daniel, that we are holistic beings, that we're supposed to be on this planet, that we're supposed to be living in a community, that there's more to my life than just my prayer life, or there's more to my life than just reading the Bible. That doing life well involves every aspect of being a man on the planet. So when I say doing life well, what comes to your mind? What do you think I'm trying to communicate with that? I've been your pastor for a little while, so yeah. What are some of the things that come to your mind?
Being gracious, being kind, tipping well.
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot. But I think that's a great example when you're sitting down to talk, or, you know, that people should know that there's something different about you. Just, you know, even by simple, something as simple as tipping a waitress or a waiter.
Right. See, well, I keep on running into these situations where marriages are falling apart, finances are out of control, stewardship is almost non-existent. It seems to me that we're really growing in an essence of a just dysfunctionalness as a society. And I would kind of compare it to this way. Anybody who's been overseas and has experienced a third world country,
right?
You think about the difference between taking a trip to Germany and taking a trip to Mexico. A difference between being in Iraq and Iran and Pakistan or the Middle East and being in any of the European countries. Set aside the progressive nature of their politics and all that. Just set that aside. I feel like as I keep encountering families and situations and properties and people in Fayetteville, and it can't be just Fayetteville, I think it's beyond our little city, that folks just aren't making a concerted effort to do life well.
Right.
As I think about doing life well, I think about this kind of holistic idea that I'm supposed to be making wise, intelligent, practical decisions that are well thought out, that reflect a general idea of stewardship. So when I say stewardship, what comes to your mind?
Taking care of resources that are giving to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So some of the listeners might not know it, but I have a little small lawn care business on the side that employs teenage boys and keeps me busy. And one of the things I see on a regular basis, Daniel, is lawnmowers that are broken. They're just sitting there in the yard broken. I often see them just sitting at like the place where they broke down. Okay? So you were mowing your grass and for whatever reason the lawnmower stopped and you couldn't get it to restart and you just left it. You literally walked away from that. So I'm going to make an assessment at that point. Those people do not know how to do life well.
Okay.
Yeah, that to me is an indicator that they have not learned how to do life well. So I've seen the grass grow up over the mower. I've seen it to where they wait 2 months to do anything with it. and then they're out. They're just outraged that the price is going to be more expensive than it was when it was originally there. I'll see them spend 2 or 3 months of paying someone to cut their grass while the mower's still there, broken. Those people don't know how to do life well. They may be doing some small aspects of their life well, but holistically, they've got glaring deficiencies. Think about someone who doesn't know how to take care of a car, Dan.
Right. Which would be me. Are you talking about like mechanically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know anything.
Right. But let's set that aside. Do you know people who know how to do that?
Yeah. Right. I go to Walmart to get my oil changed, or I go to, you know, if I have a transmission issue, I work at CarMax, so I take it to the technician at CarMax.
Right. So my contention to you is that in spite of the fact that you physically do not know how to do that, right, you're still doing life well in that area. Because what you have to decide and what each individual has to decide on a regular basis is, how should I best use my time?
Right.
Your time is valuable. Your time is important. So if you decide that my time is better spent doing this, and I have money budgeted to get the oil changed, then you're doing life as well as a person who changes the oil for themselves. Neither one is doing life any better than the other. What I'm talking about is not changing the oil at all.
Gotcha.
I'm talking about people who have a check engine light, and they just drive around for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and do nothing about it.
Right.
And then they're surprised that after driving for 6 weeks with a check engine light, that the bill is more expensive than if they had taken care of it right then and there.
Correct.
What I'm saying to you is, there doesn't seem to be this understanding that I need to be proactively stewarding all that God gave me.
Okay.
All.
Yeah.
Like I need to steward my finances. I need to steward my home. I need to steward my clothing. Think about something. Okay, what do you mean steward your clothing? All right, well, what I found is that quality shirts that are washed on gentle cycle last much longer than shirts that are just thrown in with the laundry with whatever. Okay, just, you got jeans in there. I know this sounds ridiculous to be talking. Like, I can't believe this. Isn't this a Christian podcast? But I see this as living out my Christian faith, because I see a stewardship mandate found in Genesis.
Right.
So I buy a shirt that's $55 or $60 shirt from Joseph Van Banks or whatever. All right, I have shirts in my closet that are 15 years old. They still fit well. They still hang right. They've been maintained. They've been taken care of. Have I got my money's worth out of that?
Absolutely.
Right. We have all these folks. Okay, you got your suit and it's thrown in the corner. You have your suit and it's tucked in the back seat of your car. You've got your suit and it's actually being stepped on by kids as they get in the car because you're planning on taking it to the dry cleaners. And you're, these people aren't doing life well.
Okay.
Right? They're not making conscious decisions to think about, all right, this automobile, all right, we're driving this automobile. Someday we're going to want to trade it in.
Mm-hmm.
And the trade-in value, as you well know, you sell cars, so you're going to give us an education, determines, in essence, how much did it cost me to own that car?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is that a fair idea?
Absolutely.
Right, so I spend $10,000 for a car, and I trade it in for $5,000. Right. So then, in essence, it cost me $5,000 plus whatever maintenance and interest to own that car.
Absolutely.
Is that fair?
It's very fair.
Right. Well, if I can get a better trade-in value because I stewarded that car right, then in essence, I've saved money.
Sure. Yeah.
So then why is it, you tell me then, why is it that you see such crap when you have trading cars? Because you do, right?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, we take money off of cars all the time because there's body work that needs to be done that's, you know, that started a rust. So that tells me it's been there for 6 months or upwards to a year, or like bumpers are gone, or the inside, I mean, even something small like the inside, the carpet, if it's stained, we take money off of that because we have to put money into the vehicle to take the stain out of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they don't take care of it, but
right,
they don't.
Okay. What do you think is the reason people aren't taking care of cars?
Probably.
Right.
If I had to take a guess.
Right. You said laziness. And what I would say to you is that they're not doing life well. Okay. They don't understand that a concerted effort to do the right thing becomes a habit. It literally becomes a way of life. Okay? I have no idea what your house looks like. I've never been to your house, okay? I know lots of people that do dishes a couple of times a week. A couple times a week. All right. We don't go to sleep if there's a dirty dish. That's my wife and I. They go in the dishwasher, the sink is empty, the kitchen's clean. We get up that way. I'll give you another example of doing life well. And this is a learned process.
Yeah.
I don't want to give you the impression that I'm trying to purport that I do life well. I'm going to tell you that for the last 30 years of life, I've been watching people who I believe do life well and mimicking what they do. The guy across the hallway right now, okay, my best friend, he does life incredibly well. Like, if you were to say to me, who does life really well, I would point to him all day long. I would say, Daniel, he's a better example than me. I mean, he does life really well. It's a stewardship issue. So I give you an example. When we first got married, my wife was just adamant that we would not go on vacation until the house was clean. We would not leave for vacation. We're not going to Michigan. We're not going on vacation until the house is clean. And I mean clean. I mean just immaculate clean. Nothing needs to be done. Every piece of laundry is done. The dishwasher has been run and emptied. There's no trash in the house. And quite frankly, I was just bothered by it. You know, I just want to leave. I just want to go on vacation. Remember, I'm in the Army during those days. I just want to leave.
Right.
And then I come home after 2 weeks of being on the road. You know how that is. And
yeah.
You've been all the relatives, and you're just exhausted. And you've been everywhere. And then you step into this immaculate house.
Right.
That's doing life well. Because when you come off of a vacation, Daniel, the last thing you want to do is come in and clean. You're exhausted. This vacation is often more tiring than just doing life normally.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that's listening to this podcast is nodding their head right now in agreement going, yeah, I've been there, I've done that. You know, a week to Disneyland is supposed to be a vacation? That ain't a vacation. That'll just wear you out. Kids in there, meals three times, and then you step into the house. And it's cool, and it's clean, and all you got to do is unpack your clothes and go back to living life. I came to really appreciate that to the point now that that's a habit for us. That's a way of life for us. I would suggest to the listener, we do life well in that regard. Because when you come back, you see the benefits of doing that. Does it take some extra effort? Sure, it takes some extra effort. Something as simple as my clothes closet. Everything in my clothes closet is hung exactly. Someone says, oh, that's militaristic. Oh, that's because you were a former first sergeant. I don't really think so. I think it's more about the idea that when I want to wear something, I don't want to be yelling through the house, have you seen my view? I think that creates this stress, this conflict, this difficulty. Life is already hard enough.
And I'm going to be transparent with you. So that's something that me and Sarah joke about a lot. Sarah's my wife. And so I can't, you know, I often say, have you seen, right? Or, you know, I'll be like, have you seen my name tag? Or have you seen not necessarily my keys or, you know, because I have certain places I put things, but, you know, I can understand why you would want your clothes to be a certain way.
Well, it's all about this idea of I only get so many minutes a day. I only get so many hours a day. I need to make the most of it.
Right.
You know, that's my life. You can kind of see that, Daniel. So I need to be structuring my life in such a way that I get the most out of it. I don't have any time on Sunday morning to be looking for this, that, or another thing. You know, being 45 minutes late to church is not an option for me.
Correct.
Right. That's what the typical church member can do. They can walk into 15 minutes in the sermon and feel like they've been to church. You know, that's not an option for me. So you begin to realize these necessities that have to be incorporated into your life. There's all kinds of examples of these. You mentioned on our way over here in the truck when we were driving this idea of learning to love your wife as Christ loved the church.
Correct.
This unconditional, sacrificial life, love where you're more important than I am.
Right.
I'm going to tell you, most of our husbands in the church are not doing that.
I mean, I would just tell them if they're not, they should, or at least try. That's something that, you know, and by no means am I saying that I'm perfect at it, because I still have, you know, I still deal with selfishness and I still deal with, but, you know, that's one thing that I noticed when I worked on it the most, it had the most impact on Sarah, because, you know, at one point in our life, like you talk about video games, right? So at one point in our life, video games were more important than my wife. At one more, you know? And then she would express that in a way that would, you know, almost be disrespectful.
Right.
Okay? Which would make, we call it the crazy cycle.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, well, why are you disrespecting me?
Right.
But then, I really learned through, like, Ephesians and, you know, just talking with other men that if I put her first, it makes my life so much easier and so much better. And I still fail at that at times, but she's, you know, I feel like I'm lucky because she's super gracious. And she waited for, and same thing with her, right? So she learned, she gets those urges to, like, be disrespectful. She'll just bite her tongue. She just won't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because she knows that all that's going to do is set, you know, give me the fuel.
The ammunition.
Yeah.
And then
now when she does do it, I just look at her and I say, you know what? I'm so sorry that I've upset you and I love you.
Yep.
You know, and so we, and then so that we, I don't think we've fought, you know, like, I mean, we've had a, I don't say disagreement, but like she'll think one thing, you know, she gets super passionate about, you know, abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, that's great. Yeah, it's just not, it's not my, like, she's like super into it. But I guess for us is we haven't fought in probably 3 or 4 years since I got saved and I really started working on that particular thing.
So would you say that you're doing life well as a married couple in that area?
Yes.
Right. Okay, so that's a key component to doing life well, is figuring out how am I going to cohabitate with this female that I've made a covenant to.
Correct.
And I made this promise before God that I'm going to live with her, so now I can live with her in turmoil. I can live with her as basically roommates, or I can actually apply the truths of Scripture and decide we're going to do this thing called marriage well. What I'm suggesting to you is that there is a very significant lack of effort being made to do life well. That people don't get up in the morning with a conscious decision to do life well. That involves making the right choice. That involves pursuing excellence. That involves, stewarding what you have. You know, I've got this house. I can let this house go to crap, run down, or I can stay on top of it.
Right.
Right. What am I going to do? Which aspect I'm going to do? Go back to lawn care for just a minute as another way of example. It's not our focus. It's a way of illustrating what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see all the time on a regular basis, we need to sell this house. Please come over to the house, give us a quote on everything it takes to get this house ready to go on the market. So at that point, they'll spend $1,000. Now, they've been living in a house for 3 years, and they've been putting up with landscaping that is just mediocre at best. The appearance of their house is almost an embarrassment to them. They don't have folks over. They really don't want anyone to know where they live because it's pretty much embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But now that it's time to sell the house, they fork over the money and get it ready to be sold. They're not doing life well. They're not enjoying the beauty of landscaping. They're not enjoying the beauty of their home. They're not, none of that. They end up spending the money anyway, but they end it on the tail end.
Mm-hmm.
If they just spend that money in the beginning and over time in preparation for the day that they're going to sell their house, they would have lived in a nicer home, they would have enjoyed the beauty of that, and they wouldn't have had to fork out the $2,000 at the tail end that somebody else is going to be a beneficiary. I've often find that although the landscaping does not add to the value of the home, it creates the curb appeal that allows you to sell your home faster.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, it's a cost-saving thing, because if you have to move because of CarMax and your home sits on the market for a year because no one wants to buy it, because when they drive up to your parking lot, your driveway, there's not an initial appeal, then what? Well, you're paying that mortgage payment every single month while you're living somewhere else. You see it in your business all the time. You talk about repossessions.
Oh, yeah.
Those people aren't doing life well.
Right. They're not paying their bills.
They don't know how to live within their means, and because they don't know how to live within their means, they're not paying their bills.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what a budget is. They don't know what's appropriate for their income level. They don't know the idea that although this automobile is going to depreciate the second I pull it off the lot, I can have an impact on the depreciation.
You can.
Right.
Yeah.
I can have an impact on that. I can get top value for my trade-in, or I can get nothing for my trade-in, and who gets to decide that? For the most part, I do.
Right.
By the means of which I take care of this. So whether we're talking about a lawn, or whether we're talking about a automobile, or whether we're talking about your wife, I'm going to steward my wife. She's a precious commodity in my life. Yes, she's a human being, but she adds to my life. She makes my life better.
Much better.
Right. She's a helpmate according to the Word of God. How do I treat her? Is her opinion important to me? Is her opinion valuable to me? Is the time that I spend with her important to me? Does she see that I see her as important?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's doing life well. I'm going to suggest to you that fewer and fewer people are doing life well.
I think that, I'm going to be honest, and so this is just a personal opinion, but I feel like the reason why that is because we've become, I don't want to say super private, but like you said something on Sunday about Google, right? So people don't know what they don't know because they can just Google it.
Right.
Okay. So I feel like there isn't somebody to teach them, you know, how to do life well.
Right, right. I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
So, and I mean, not just, you know, people outside of the church, but even people inside of the church.
Absolutely.
Same thing, you know.
Right. Like, now, I think one of the things that's contributed to that, well, there's several things. You mentioned one thing from your life. I would say the same thing in part is true for my life. The lack of fathers.
Correct.
Who teach sons how to do life well.
And that's my biggest, I feel like that's my biggest ministry, because I have a son,
right?
Well, I have two sons and a daughter. And, you know, I want to make sure that they do life well.
Right. And so you've got to model what doing life well looks like.
But when I was honest with myself, seriously thinking about it, I didn't know what doing life well was.
Right, and I would say that it starts with a deliberate decision to, I'm going to do life well. So that means that I'm going to develop relationships with other men who do life well. And I'm going to look at what they're doing and how they do life well. And then instead of going to Google to figure out how to do life well, I have these relationships, Daniel, with men in and out of the congregation that I reach out to and have communication with when it's time to figure out how to do life well. But because we've become so private,
mm-hmm.
and so transient and so internet-based in our lifestyle, we don't have conversations with people about how to do life well. We don't look for people that do life well and watch the way they do life well. There was a man by the name of Gary Botts that was in this church. He was a lieutenant colonel when I was a private. When I was a private, he was a lieutenant colonel. And I honestly and aggressively just went after, you got to show me how to do life well. You know, because you got three boys and a daughter, and you're doing life well. I want to have a relationship. You're 20 years my senior.
I want you to teach me how to do life. We're going to have a relationship.
Right.
So I would get to church early. I would stay late. Anything that I could do to interact with Gary Botz, to run into Gary Botz, to have conversations with Gary Botz. You see, this is pre-mobile phone days, Daniel. This is where you had to stare at somebody and have a conversation like we're having right now. You're right. These phones are a distraction to us from building relationships.
Correct. And I think for me, like, when I look at, I've been trying to, like, Sarah and I was part of that transient lifestyle, okay?
So right. Moving.
I came to Fayetteville in my current position with the assumption that in 3 years I'm going to get promoted and then I'm going to move.
Right.
And then I think it was about 7 months ago, you gave a sermon and you said, how many of you consider your church before taking a promotion, right? And that's, like, me and Sarah really talked about that, and that's when we made the decision, you know what, I think we're just going to buy a house. We need to kind of, I don't know, not settle, but stop the transient lifestyle. And then if, you know, instead of pursuing it, if God opens a door for us to move to somewhere else, that's fine. But a lot of it is constantly, you know, moving in that direction and then putting all your focus on that. We also had another conversation where you were like, because, you know, I didn't get a lot when I was a kid, when you were like, do you love your kids? You know, do you spend time with your kids? And I'm like, you know, I had a lot of apprehension about that. But you put it so plainly, you were like, if you're not doing it, you're just not doing it well, I guess. And so that I put a lot of time in making sure that, you know, I take my daughter out to breakfast or, you know, simple things. Like if I go to pick up snacks, so I teach third and fourth grade Sunday school. You know, I tell it's Peyton is her daddy-daughter date.
Right.
So it's 10 minutes to drive to Food Lion and buy fruit snacks.
Right.
And she looks forward to it every Sunday.
Exactly. So now let's talk about doing life well in that regard. Lots of dads, they're grabbing the daughter, they're jumping in the vehicle, and then the music goes up or whatever goes up.
No, you have to talk.
Right. And there's no conversation.
Right.
Right. So although you're actually with your daughter, you're still not doing life well. Because you're not using this opportunity to interact. You're not using this opportunity to communicate. You're not building any values into it. You're not deliberately doing anything. You know, and that's really the lack of a conscious decision to say that we're going to do this. I mean, look, you and I have spent the last hour and a half together.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, I've been able to get a lot of junk done. But we've had tons of conversations simultaneously.
Yes, sir.
Right. So we've been doing life well. You know, this idea that we can come together, we can build a deck together, but during the building of the deck together, we can talk about child discipline, we can talk about marriage, we can talk about finances. We're going to interact. We're going to have relationships. We're going to talk. We're going to keep... This is an absent thing in our society. I wish, for example, that I could just come in on a Sunday morning and rip cell phones out of everybody's hands, just or a box at the foyer, and you have to deposit your cell phone in this box before you can come into the worship zone. Because I see over and over and over again people staring at their phone in a pew, and they're surrounded by other people. Going to church is not going to the movies.
Right.
It's not the same, and yet we've equated it the same. When you go to the movies, Daniel, you don't walk around shaking people's hands and saying hello to them. You don't care about who's behind you. You're there to watch the movie. All right. Church is not that.
Right.
Worship is not that. How in the world are you going to learn how to do well from somebody if you don't even know the name? And that's where we're at. Steve Wilson and I have been friends for a very, very long time. Saturday mornings forever we played racquetball together. Week after week. Do you know how many hundreds of conversations we would have when we were taking a break between a racquetball match? You can just, we drive there together, play racquetball for a couple hours, get in the car, drive back. There's not enough of that happening in the body of Christ.
Right.
Okay. Men men should not be playing video games unless they're playing them with their sons. Just bottom line. There's no reason for a 30-year-old to be playing a video game unless he or she is designating quality time. He or she, that I'm going to be with my daughter, I'm going to be with my son. That's it. The idea that I'm going to go to a notional world and build a notional city on a video game thing? Are you kidding me? You have a real world to build.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, you know, stems from, like, when we were growing up, right? So, like, like when I, you know, I'm 34, okay? And I still play video games. And I, you know, outside of my son, you know, just being transparent.
Right.
So I play a lot less video games than I used to, but I still play video games. But I'm starting to realize, like, how, you know, all they do is put me in a bad mood, or, you know, nothing of value comes out of that time that I spent, you know, clicking buttons and, you know, moving, you know, through, you know, whatever I'm doing.
So why do you think it is that 30-somethings are still playing video games?
I think because when we grew up, we didn't have interaction, I guess. So, like, when I think of when I grew up, like my favorite Christmas, I got a Super Nintendo for Christmas. And so, like, I would come home from school and nobody would talk to me. And I would be by myself playing video games. And then I would go to bed, and then I would wake up, and I'd wake myself up, and I'd get ready for school. I'd go to school, and then I would come home, I'd do my homework, and then, you know, at 7 o'clock, my mom would come home from work, you know, just destroy, you know, she worked two jobs,
mm-hmm.
and then she would go to sleep. And then, you know, so I'd be by myself all the time. And then I think as, you know, as we got older, you know, they just came out with more and more and more different video games. And so that's kind of like where, you know, I've met people my age that grew up in like North Dakota or Indiana. And they didn't have video games. They had wrestling.
Right. Okay? Right.
So they're like locked into, you know, wrestling. I think wrestling personally is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, a bunch of men in underwear.
Right.
But they think it's, mm-hmm. you know, phenomenal. But I just think there's more, you know, that generation is the same. So then, like, with my son, we try to limit the amount of video games that he can play.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. But it's just, I don't know. And I've started to, like, wean back from it. And so, like, now I have tools, like you said. So, like, a pressure washer to pressure wash. I didn't even know you could do that. I honestly did not know when your deck's gray, you can pressure wash it to get it back to its original color, so then you can stain it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because nobody, I never got taught how to do that. And all of those things just weren't important when I was growing up. It was, you need to get good grades in school, you need to learn how to use a computer, you need to learn how to type, you need to how to, you know, even when I was in the Army, you know, you need to learn how to use PowerPoint. You need to. There was never a time when somebody, you know, I mean, like the grass thing.
Mm-hmm.
Grass is a great example. So I'm like, man, I got all these weeds in my front yard. What do I do? So I text you, and you're like, hey, spray this. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I have holes in my yard. Now what do I do? I just don't know.
Right.
And when I Google, all I, you know, they call them internet trolls. All, you know, it's like two opposing sides and who can yell the loudest, when really I just want somebody to come alongside me and say, hey, you know what, I've been doing this for 30 years and this is what I would do.
Right.
That, right. I, that I trust.
And know? What I'm saying to you is that people who are trying to do life well deliberately build relationships with others to receive mentorship from them in particular areas of life.
Yeah.
And when we're always moving, this transient, changing, one year we're this date, the next year we're over here, how do you build relationships? How do you develop lives? How do you network into a community so that you can actually begin to do life well in that community? You know, where are these people that you can reach out to and say, this is what's happening, what would you do? And they say, try this and try this. And yes, the internet can be a resource. There's no doubt. A YouTube video can be a great resource. man, I've learned how to do lots of things on YouTube. But in the end, when I've got to make a decision between YouTube video A and YouTube video B, and they're like you said, opposing, it's wonderful to have somebody who's smarter than me, wiser than me, more knowledgeable in this area, to reach out to and say, what do you think? What choice would you make? All that to say, that's a deliberate way of doing life. You know, I want to do life well. Last night, Jack Farmer was talking to us from the Proverbs, and he talked about, you know, the proverb says that, you know, this wise man gives an inheritance to his children's children. So that means that my goal is to provide a resource sufficient that my granddaughter benefits from my passing. Two generations. So that means that I've got to take care of my home. I've got to receive something. There's the potential that we're going to inherit something, Daniel, that we really don't want to inherit. It's going to be a home that's a disaster.
Right.
A home that's literally falling apart.
But I think it's because people don't talk. I know that's what you said, but they don't have conversations, or, you know, or I've done that. I've been like, hey, you want to come over for dinner? I'm busy, or, you know, I can't, or, you know, I just think when I think about it, like, I wish, you know, I would like to hear from, in our church, we hear it more often than not, right? So from eldermen in the church, like, you know, Jeff Woosley, or, you know, like you, or Pastor Wilson, or, you know, I mean, there's more. I wish that that knowledge that you guys had kind of transcended better to us. Because sometimes I'll be honest, the 30-year-old generation's winging it. And we just don't know. And I know that we know that what we grew up with was not truth. I know that part. Because my parents are part of the whole once saved, always saved. My wife tells me, or my mom tells me all the time, my name's written in the book of life. And I'm like, you know, you don't think Jesus has an eraser. Like, it just, you haven't been to church since I was 8. And you've lived however you want. And so I think a lot of my generation is searching for the ability to do life well, but the information's lost.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Right. Because the internet is just a cesspool.
Right.
I mean, it's a landmines everywhere, a minefield of how to do life well. And we're not putting a premium on, see, doing life well glorifies God. We don't get that idea. Getting up every morning with a deliberate plan of action, I'm going to accomplish these things, I'm going to make this happen, I'm going to deliberately go through life making relationships, taking care of things, stewarding my time, taking care of my body, all these things are this holistic approach to doing life well.
Right.
So, you know, say something like video games. All right. I would suggest to you, first, that you should utterly wean yourself off of that. That at some point you have to say, that's a childish thing, and I'm going to put that away. But I know that there's listeners out there that would just say, can't believe you're saying that. So let's just say that it's not that, and it's a way of relaxing or whatever. Now, you have to decide if it legitimately is. But having said that,
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say video games are probably the most selfish thing you can do. There's no relaxing part about it. You exclude everyone else, and your goal is to be alone. Or at least that is what it is for me. So when I choose to play video games over doing something else, it's an act of selfishness. It's what, and it may not be there for them, but I mean, I'm just being transparent. And I do it more often than I wish that I did.
Right, so I would suggest to you that when you're making that decision, you need to put a time limit to it. And if you don't put a time limit to it, then you're definitely not doing life well.
Right.
And I would suggest to you, this is Facebook. This is binge watching on Netflix. This is everything. I mean, this idea that I don't have an end game. I'm going to be here for 4 hours watching Netflix. Or you're not doing life well. You cannot tell me that you're so caught up in life. In other words, you're there. There isn't other things that you could do better at that given time, right? That you're done. That you're that caught up. I see it all the time. Where we're half an hour late for church. Our cars are disgusting inside of them. The kids look like they need a bath. If those are the conditions, you don't have a moment to be on a video game.
Right. Well, my kids take shower.
Yours do, yes.
Yeah, no.
What I'm suggesting to you is what I see.
Yeah.
This is what I see. Yeah. And I have ladies come to me all the time about their husbands who play video games. And they feel like they're doing life alone. That there isn't teamwork. There isn't. It's not my partner. Might be my husband, but it's not my partner. Mm. They're not co-laborers. You know, there's no cohesiveness there. So if you're going to play video games, right, it has to be a time limit.
Right.
It has to be a limit. 30 minutes, 1 hour. That's it. Bam. Like, I'm done. I'm going to go on to something else. I don't want you to get the impression that I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are times when I need some downtime. And my wife is awesome about recognizing when I need some downtime. And for me, oftentimes, it's just resting. Just closing my eyes and resting. Or it might be watching a movie. But if your downtime, whatever it is, doesn't have an end to it, then you've crossed into sin somewhere. Okay, if I told you I'm in bed every day till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, every day, day after day after day, you'd begin to wonder about my work ethic.
Right.
If I told you that I watched 24 hours of Netflix this week, and you begin to mentally do the math, and you go, holy cow, that's 3 hours a day. You see where I'm going with this stuff? What I'm suggesting to you is people are not analyzing stuff.
Right.
They're not analyzing it. They're not saying, how did I use my time today? How are we spending our finances? Do we have a budget?
Right. But see, I feel like I feel like it's because it has to be a learned behavior.
Right.
And so you have to take time to learn it, but, you know, it's... I think that, you know, one of the things I text you is I know that I'm not the only one. I just might be the only one willing to
speak up.
But I know that there are other people. I mean, like, I teach third and fourth grade Sunday school, okay? The rule that I have, you have to bring your Bible to Sunday school.
Right.
And every Sunday, at least 6 or 7 kids don't have a Bible.
Right. Why is that?
Right. I don't know. I can make assumptions. I can tell you they didn't bring their Bible because their parents didn't make them, or they don't know where it is, or that's the last time they looked at it was in my Sunday school class, or.
Yep.
But that's the thing is you know, I feel like, okay, there are some spots in my life where I'm doing life well, okay? So, like, at my job, I'm rated exceptional. I'm doing life well, okay? My relationships with my children, you know, I feel like I'm doing life well in that aspect. But there are, you know, my relationship with my wife, would I commit to you that I'm doing 100% doing life well? No. Like, when you say co-laborers, right? I've never heard that term before. And I've been beneficial enough because I do work so many hours that my wife, you know, she pretty much takes care of everything. You know, and I often have cracked the joke, and I've stopped cracking the joke because I realize, you know, it's probably running over into sin that, you know, I make the money and she does everything else. And I don't necessarily know if that's fair to her or to the...
Yeah, I would not want you to ever say that again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would want you to embrace the idea that I'm the leader of this home.
Right.
Right, and part of being the leader of this home is I'm not the weaker vessel.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to, my son is going to see me doing my part. One time, my daughter-in-law's grandmother came over to our house for Thanksgiving dinner. She'll never run into this podcast. She doesn't even know the podcast exists, so it's no big deal. But she could not get over the way my wife and I can work together in hosting people and providing for this Thanksgiving dinner. We've been working together in the kitchen. I'm no cook by any means. I can just come in and be that supporting role. Mm-hmm. Okay? She's clearly the cook. I'm not trying to become the cook. I don't like cooking. But I certainly can get things out, set a table, come behind her, clean up as she's working. There's no way I'm going to sit down to a Thanksgiving dinner and then leave the mess for her to clean up.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And what we found is that when we work together as those co-laborers, like I was describing to you, she was amazed. She literally said, I've never seen that in the culture that I'm from. I've never seen husbands and wives working together. And what we can't experience is not working together. We can't experience that's foreign to us. We're trying to do life well when we're hosting somebody, setting the table, providing a place, a meal that has.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
But I think so like when I like when you talk like that, right? So the thing that comes to mind for my generation, okay? Or the people that are in my age group. The examples that we had, so like my definition of a man has changed dramatically since I've become sworn to be a member of this church, okay? Just dramatically. Because when I grew up, you know, men smoked, men drank,
mm-hmm.
They stayed out, whenever they came home, whenever they wanted, they left whenever they wanted, you know.
Because they're men.
And I have a feeling that people in my age group know, hey, that's not right. It's not the truth. That's not what it's supposed to be like. But we don't have a different example to go off of to counteract with it.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, like, you know, there's some things I'll read in Scripture, right? And then I immediately apply it, okay? But then there's other things that it's a condition that I've been through over and over and over and over and over again to where, like here's an example. So I heard Robbie say that he said that him and his wife do laundry together.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to my wife and I was like, you know, I don't do laundry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So now we have like laundry folding parties.
Because
mm-hmm. I said, what part don't you like? Mm-hmm. She doesn't like to fold it and put it away.
Right.
So that's the part, like you said, I can support on her, but I don't think there, before then, when I was growing up, that was my mom's job.
Right.
She did my brother and my dad when he was there. She did all our laundry. And so I almost feel like it prepared us to be in this perpetual state of being a child. And so like that's the reason why I said I don't know if my definition of doing life well makes sense. And I don't know if I know all the ins and outs of doing life well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there would be a lot of people that could benefit from learning, you know, just like you said, what those things are.
Yeah, it sounds like we have to figure out venues and forums to have Q&As and to talk about very practical aspects. But part of it is what you're doing now, Daniel, which is this awareness that God expects me to do life well. And doing life well is not strictly measured by the net income I bring into the house.
Right.
Yeah, that there's a greater component to doing life well than just that, you know, whether it's tackling projects around the house, whether it's helping get the laundry caught up, whether it's reorganizing a linen closet so that it's, we know where stuff is, whether it's deliberately, pick whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. It's learning how to plant a bush. We're going to watch a YouTube video. We're going to go to a nursery. We're going to pick out a thing, the whole family, my boy, my daughter. We're going to plant this bush. We're going to water it once a day. We're actually going to see something grow. You know, they're going to get the sense of, you know, I could do this. You know, I tell the boys that work for me all the time, you know, nobody's expecting you to do lawn care for the rest of your life. But what you're learning right now is going to be invaluable to you in taking care of the lawn that you have. And they have this confidence, man, when I get this house, I'm going to do this and this. And well, they're growing in that awareness of this stewardship or this ownership. Cole Kaiser was working the other day, and he was over on the corner on my driveway. And I said, Cole, what are you working on? He'd been over there for a few minutes. And he said, you know how this lever didn't seem to be as... And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I realized a bolt had vibrated out. And so the assist pedal that helps lift the deck wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. All right, I love it. I mean, that's just like bananas. He's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to let it just fall apart. He noticed it wasn't functioning correctly. He diagnosed the problem. He determined that he could fix it himself. He went in the garage, found a bolt, a simple bolt, put a new one in there, tightened it down, and then was just tickled to pigs. Tickle's not the right word that he would use, but you understand, he fixed it.
Right.
Right. He's learning to do life well.
Yeah. Like the other day, my father-in-law came in, and he helped us with our deck. And then Sarah needed a new step, and I had never made a step before. You know, I measured it, I cut the wood, and it's probably not the most beautiful step anybody's ever made.
But it's
made.
A functioning step, right?
Right, and I made it, and he had that sense of pride. Not pride.
No, that's the right word. That's fine. Yeah. It's a legitimate sense. Pride is a component built into us. It's when it detracts from giving God the glory that it becomes sinful.
Yeah.
You know? There's nothing wrong with looking at a lawn or a project or anything that you've done and go, man, that looks nice.
I think my biggest concern is...
So how do you get that out of video games?
How do I get that out of video games? I don't.
Right, exactly.
It's legitimately just... It's something that I do. I've always done it, so... Mm-hmm.
Right, it's part of your life.
Right. So, I mean... Yeah. No value.
What I'm saying is, get out there and build a step.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Find out something that would make your life better for your wife. She goes into her laundry room, and there are no shelves. There are no shelves in her laundry room. And because you're so busy, and because you're on the videos, not you personally, let's just make a fictional person, she's never ever complained about the fact that, I really wish there was a shelf in this laundry room so that every time I open the top drawer of the washing machine, I didn't have to take the soap and place it away and then put it back. It really is good. But she doesn't dare ask her husband because she doesn't have the confidence and knows how to do that. He doesn't own any tools to where he can do it himself. So you know what happens? They live in that house for 3 years without a shelf above the laundry room. That's normative in our society.
Right.
That would have never happened 50 years ago. That would have never happened 25 years ago. Nobody would have ever went without a shelf where they needed a shelf. Because everybody can conceptually put a shelf in. Now we act like going to the lumber yard, buying a 6-foot board, measuring down to 48 inches, putting shelves up, screwing, is like this major ordeal. We got to watch 5 YouTube videos in order to figure out how to do that. So you know what? We never do it. And so we live with this chaos. We live with this lack of organization. Life is more difficult for us because we don't have these things.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Right.
Everything you're saying is, but I, you know, again, I think it really is like, I think A, somebody has to say something. So I guess that's the reason why I agree.
We're having this podcast, right?
We're having, and then B, I think that, you know, the people that feel the same way, like, you just have a little, like you said, like a Q&A or something to, you know, like, a great example is I have a workbench at my house. It is the ugliest workbench on the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's two sawhorses with some boards put together. It's not level, you know, but it's functional. It works, and I made it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super proud of it.
Right.
You know?
Because it's your workbench.
Right. And then when Sarah saw me put that together, she was like, you know, I've always wanted shelves in the garage. Will you build me shelves? So I said, yes. And then as I was building, I was like, I'm going to need your help because, you know, how big you want these shelves. I can't hold it and screw it at the same time, you know, doing all that stuff. And so we, that's something that we, when we're working on the house, like we redid our floors together. Or, you know, put in quarter round. I'd never put in quarter round. And we did. We learned how to do that together. And that's made us closer. But, yeah, so...
So that's an example of doing life well.
Right.
You know, you can contract it out. Sometimes it's wiser to contract it out. Sometimes it's not. You have to, there's always a balance. How much money do you make in your hourly wage? How much time do you have? You're managing those things. That's what doing life well is. All right, I don't paint. I know how to paint, but I hate painting. I get in a bad mood when I paint. So you know what I do? I don't paint. I pay someone to paint. I can go make the money cutting grass, and they can paint. Mm-hmm. So that's a stewardship issue. Could I do it myself? The answer is yes. But I lose my Christian testimony. I don't like it. I'm irritable when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn out the way I think it should. So it's wiser for me to do that. But when you can figure out how to do it, do it. If you need a tool, spend the money on the tool. You'll be amazed you'll use it again and again and again. You know how many households don't have a drill?
Yeah.
How do you function without a drill?
I have no idea because since I've been a homeowner, we have three drills.
Right.
We have like a regular drill, an impact drill, and...
Right.
And a Sawzall. I don't think it's a drill. But yes.
People are just everything. Daniel is buy it and throw it away. We don't fix it.
Right.
We don't hold on to it, and that's why we have nothing. You know, and we're always intimidated. You know, how many houses don't have a level? How do you function without a level? How do you hang a picture without a level? How do you see where I'm going? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are components to this stewardship. You know, at what point will you begin to teach your son? As early as possible. As early as come hold this. You know? Drill one in and then get him to drill the other one in. Teach him that you don't have to be afraid of this drill. You have to learn to use it, right? But you don't have to be afraid of it. This saw will never cut you if you use it this way. You know? How many people have no idea how to use a chainsaw? On and on and on.
I've never used a chainsaw.
Right, exactly. So when you need one, you find someone who owns mm-hmm. one. You get a lesson on how to use it. You borrow theirs.
Right.
You give it back to them appropriately, cleaned up and everything like that, so that no one says, I'm never going to loan him something again.
Mm-hmm.
You give it back in a timely manner. You say, hey, man, can you come over and show me how to use this? And then you actually learn how to do something.
Right.
We're not making a concerted effort to do life well.
I feel like that's more Christian, what you just said, than most people realize.
Like, yes.
Where you're talking, you know, you're borrowing, you know, because I feel like one of the things that really brought me to Christ was when me and Sarah first started going to church, and we met this family, and their last name's Fiore. And the dad did life well, okay? He had seven kids. He's like a GS 97 or something. I mean, so right. Crazy. He's a rocket scientist, like a legitimate rocket scientist. And, but he would, you know, come alongside me and say, hey, you know, have you tried this? Do you know what this is? And he would help in that aspect. But I feel like there's not a lot of that happens anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Where
sure.
People,
right, you know. And it's deliberate. It's deliberate in two ways. It's the up deliberate, which is I'm going to find people.
Yes.
And it's the down deliberate. I'm going to help people in that relationship. It goes literally both directions.
Correct.
Well, you're not doing that when you're on video games.
Right.
I mean, I have wives tell me the house is falling apart, and he's playing video games. You have to step over the laundry to get through a room, and he's playing video games. I mean, at some point, it becomes sinful.
Yeah.
It has to be. There's just no way that you can see that level of neglect and it not be a problem. You know, and then they crawl in bed and they want to make love and they don't understand why the wife has no interest whatsoever in making love after you've been playing in a notional world for an hour and a half.
Right, and you haven't talked to her at all.
Right, no interaction whatsoever with the kids, anything like that. Dads who do life well read to their children. They read to their children. They interact with their children. When you read something to your children, what you're saying, Daniel, is this is so important that dad's reading it to you. Mm. Now just think about that very idea. How important is this? I want you to hear this. I want you to hear it with my own voice. I want you to hear it with the inflection that I'm going to bring this alive to you. Come listen to this story. Where is that today? It's absence.
Yeah.
It's absence.
I mean, just being transparent, I don't think outside of like Bible time when we read scripture, I don't think I've ever sat down and like read a book to my kid.
And I'm telling you, you're missing out.
Right.
I'm telling you that you ought to incorporate that into your life. I mean, you ought to get the classics, the absolute classics that you want your kids to enjoy. And you ought to read that. Your 10-year-old, your 8-year-old, your 6-year-old, come sit down. And first of all, you'll be amazed at how therapeutic it is for yourself. Mm-hmm. Second of all, they're going to think this is the greatest thing in the world that dad is reading to us. I mean, you eliminate the distractions. The phone is away. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to get into the story. And I'm going to be the amazing narrator. And think they have to work strictly on listening and their own imagination. You'll be amazed at how developmentally profitable that is for them. And yet it's just about absent. Why? We have the internet, we have Google, we have YouTube, we have video games. We don't need daddy to read a story to us. Three Musketeers. I bet you I read the Three Musketeers to Austin 4 times. 150 pages, man. Just could not get enough of that quality time. I'm suggesting to you that that's doing life well. When you've got your three, right?
Yes, sir.
3 kids around you. And man, mama doesn't have to worry about a thing, man, because dad's got the 3 kids around her. And for 20 minutes, all we're going to do is read. We're just going to read. They're going to say to you, can we do it again, daddy?
Yeah.
You'll be amazed. And what you're saying is, this is important. It's so important that I'm going to spend time with you, teaching them about George Mueller, teaching them about these historical individuals that they need to know who they are and the value that they bring to the Christian world. But literally, in my upstairs bedroom, I have a shelf of all the Christian classics that I read to Austin. I'm looking forward to reading them to my granddaughter. Yeah. Come sit on my lap and listen to this. And they have to sit still. They have to learn to listen. Think about those skills that they're learning. They're not going to be entertained with what they see. They have to use their imagination. Good stuff. You know, we're not playing video games tonight. We're going to read. And of course you'll get the initial pushback. But once you get beyond that, it's going to be like, I remember when you used to read to me.
Right.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
And so we have to make a deliberate effort to do life well. We have to find men that are doing life well and look for how they do life well and pattern that. We have to analyze our own lives and say, where do I want to work on doing life well? You know, is it the stewardship of this, that, or another thing? And then make a conscious decision. And what a great resource. Where, Swear, do you think that I could do more in doing life well?
Yeah, talk to your partner.
Yeah, talk to your partner. You know? Once you set the conditions to where they can be honest with you, there isn't pushback, they will become a helpmate. But they'll be reserved in the beginning because, you know, they don't know how to take this. Are you going to become defensive? Or are you going to say, you're right? You know, you're right.
I think if you're honest with yourself, you can say you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listeners, this podcast is going to be titled Doing Life Well. We'd love for you to give us a comment if you have a particular question that you have after doing this. If you have some ideas on the way we could help others do life well, I'd love for you to comment on the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.